going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Vile Files. I am your host, Nick, and we have a doozy of an episode for you today. Michael, the wonderful, adorable fan favorite from Katie's season, Daddy
and Zaddy.
And Zaddy, Michael is here to speak with us about his experience and his life, his loss, his possibility of being the next Bachelor, his thoughts on Katie, Greg, all of the above, Thomas. There's a lot of meat in this episode, so we are excited to bring that conversation to you. I am joined by the wonderful team with Chrissy, Amanda, and Allie. How is everyone doing today?
I'm good. I'm just like, I feel like the universe's standard for men, like the bar for men, is in hell. Like, I'm over it. I'm why? Like, this is why I'm single. I just feel like people
just men.
Yeah, I'm just like over it.
Okay, not to salt in the wound, Allie. I had a great first date this week.
Okay, and I will be heading home. Thanks. Bye.
It was in Venice with this guy who's a private jet pilot. Which is kind of fun.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, I was like, it's such a cool profession. Like, he's done a lot of traveling, lived abroad a little bit. And so the first part of the date, like, you know, classic dinner, et cetera. And then we went to a dive bar across the street. And while we're at this dive bar, like, we're having a great time, few IPAs deep. And he kisses me. And then these two people from like across the bar start like yelling at us, like screaming at us, going, use protection, use a condom, all this stuff.
Are they trying to be funny, or are they trying to be?
They're trying to be funny. It's just like two like drunk ass 46-year-olds. Gosh, like on. It's a Monday night. They're screaming at the bar. First time I give them, you know, a good thumbs up as you suggest. They're still yelling. So then I kind of the Boston comes out a little bit, and I'm like, hey, you guys have a lot to say. Why don't you join us? And they kind of like look me in the eye, and I'm like, no, come on, like join us. So they sit at our table. We end up chatting with them for a while. It's a crazy situation. They're here for one of theirs' birthday. I assume they're a couple. Turns out they're best friends, but there's a lot of sexual tension there. But ended up having this like crazy night with this guy whose birthday it was on a Monday, and good first date.
All right. How did ever you going to see this person again?
Yeah, he's texting a lot. I told him at the end of the date, I was like, I don't really want to text. Like, I just feel like I have a lot. I don't know. I don't like texting people. Like, I like going on dates with people. I like hanging out, that kind of thing. But like, I'm not trying to text you and hear about your day all the time. I think that's kind of a waste of time. He's been texting a lot.
Many women would disagree with you. I'm getting he's a bad texter.
Yeah, I would. Meanwhile, I would disagree.
You like a good texter.
I love a good texter. But I feel like Amanda's like dancing in a rainstorm and I'm in the middle of the desert, so I'll just be in my corner.
Well, maybe Amanda's on something, because when you try to text with a guy, what happens?
I don't have anyone to text other than you.
You were just telling me a story about a guy you were texting.
Oh, well, that was technically Snapchat messages, but yeah.
Oh, same Allie.
It wasn't my idea.
What did he say?
He said, I knew you wanted to be my little slut, and that's where it ended. So,
and you had never met him in person?
Nope, never. And it was the first day we'd even like messaged back and forth.
It's a weird move.
No
justification.
I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying, next time someone asks to Snapchat message with you, that's when you know they're probably trying to say some freaky shit.
Also, well, didn't you guys kind of agree to like do some sexting a little bit?
We didn't like sex. Like, it wasn't really like anything, like it wasn't anything like vivid or anything like that. There was like nothing specific about like physicality or anything.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I'm glad you stopped talking.
Like, I'm just confused. Like, I was like finally like, you know what? This is going to be fine. He's like kind of a douche, but it's fine. He's hot. We'll just have like some casual fun. And then this card gets whipped out. I'm like, my Lord.
Oh. I think the key to online dating is talking about the stuff you want to talk about with people. Like, I think you have to go into online dating. Like, the reason I actively enjoy online dating is because I say whatever I want to say, like, very take it or leave it. Like, sometimes I'll ask very deep questions. Sometimes I'll ask just, like, very bizarre, specific questions.
You don't seem to be generally worried about what they have to say in a texting.
I think people think there's a script you're supposed to defer to. Like, you're supposed to ask, like, certain kinds of questions. But, like, those are the questions that everyone's asking. And, like,
do you like being my little...
But I would also argue that I wasn't, like... I feel like I was being myself too. Like, he was giving me like certain like lines, and I was like, well, what is your success rate of that working? Because that is absolutely ridiculous. Like, I was just kind of being like I felt like I was calling him out on his BS, and then that's still...
You'd probably be surprised.
Little slut entered the chat.
Well, the dating continues to be hard.
Amen.
It's never going to be easy. Hey, if you're tuning in to the Hear the Medical episode, as always, don't forget to send in your questions at asknick@castmedia.com for our Ask Nick episodes. If you like relationship and dating stories, people's tragedies, their successes, we learn a lot about love and relationships on Mondays. Be sure to tune in to that. Subscribe, rate us 5 stars, tell your friends. We appreciate listening. Now let's get to Michael. Michael, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
Really good to be here.
Yeah, nice
to try to get that mic into that face.
Get all up in here, huh?
How have you been?
Been good. It's been crazy, you know, after, you know, the show and, you know, just getting back to like normal life. I mean, I'm just, everything's kind of retreated back to where it was post-show. I mean, I always feel like there's certain like stages of this. There's like getting ready for the show, then actually being on it. And then there's waiting for it to be aired and then living week by week. And yeah. Now it's like, it's just relaxing.
Okay. So you feel like you're getting back to normal.
I do.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
We have a lot to talk about, I feel like.
I think we do.
Ever since you left the show, then you were on Men Tell All. And that was kind of the last we've really heard from you.
Yeah.
And yet a lot of questions or have been asked about a lot of things going on. Things have happened on the show that I think people would love your take on, from the time that you left to Katie and Blake getting engaged. let's get to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
About how did you end up on the show?
So, I mean, life is crazy. It just kind of works in mysterious ways here. And I never applied for the show, wasn't even nominated. I actually had a producer, or actually it was a casting director, reach out to me on social media. And it was crazy.
They're sliding in the DMs now.
They were. I mean, everywhere. And, you know, at first it was like, hey, would you like to be on a show? And I'm like, you know, what show is this? You know, I think because maybe, you know, my age, maybe like Jeopardy or something. And then they're like, no, it's The Bachelorette. And the first thing I thought of was like, oh my God, did my mom nominate me? This is like crazy embarrassing. And I really didn't know what to do. But, you know, it was kind of one of those things where, you know, in 2019, lost Laura. In 2020, you know, had COVID. So it just felt like the right time to, you know, take a risk, kind of gamble on yourself and do something crazy.
What were your biggest reservations going into the show?
I mean, name it. Like, you know, all when you're deciding whether or not to get on this, all you can see is what can go wrong, because you don't know what can go right. You don't know, like, the relationships that could form between, you know, myself and Katie, or even my experience with the guys in the show, like living with all these guys, you know, for an extended period of time is totally odd. I mean, I haven't done that since, you know, college. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just one of those things that I never really thought about doing it. So I wasn't really prepared or didn't know how to navigate the whole thing. So the fact that it was foreign too was kind of scary. But, you know, sometimes you just have to roll the dice.
How much did you anticipate having to, or wanting to, or just, you know, knowing it's a dating show, knowing it's about love? I mean, before I get into that question, how familiar were you with the premise of the show?
Yeah, so this was actually Laura's favorite show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, everybody knows this who's been in like a long relationship, you know, like boyfriend or girlfriend, husband and wife, they have their favorite shows. And like, usually, you know, if you don't want to watch it, you just go into the other room. And I was doing that for a while when she was watching The Bachelor. But then it was like, you know, we're getting off work and what, we're spending the whole night in different rooms watching, you know, God knows what. And so the first season I actually watched was Juan Pablo's season, which personally, I mean, is my favorite still, because it was just such a train wreck.
It's a good season.
And fantastic. It's great.
It's a great season.
It's great. Like, it always goes down as like one of the like craziest ones or whatever. But Like, I just loved it. Like, the disorder was like crazy entertaining. And then, you know, before I even knew it, I started developing like opinions about people, about like situations. I'm like, oh my God, I'm locked into this. But, you know, then I mean, I was casually in it, but really didn't know too much about it outside of watching a handful of like seasons there, here and there.
Wow. So then while you're going through this, you know, you've been reached out by the show, you're considering it, knowing that it was your wife's favorite show. What was that like thought process like? I mean, in terms of like, did it feel like extra meta being like, I'm about to go on this? Did you guys ever even joke about, even though you're married, you know, so I know a lot of yeah. married couples be like, oh my, you would do so well in the show, or vice God. Versa.
Yeah. Like, I mean, she used to say that stuff all the time, like when we were watching it, because I would give her my hot takes on what these guys should be doing or what they could be doing. And she'd be like, you'd be so good on this. Like, you should totally do it. You know, we could get divorced and you could just like totally come back and you could, you know, we'll get back together and just totally play the system.
Shit.
I'm like, geez, you're a con artist, Laura. Like, my God, these are people's feelings. You're heartless. But it was just kind of a fun game. And I think, you know, I think after losing somebody, you're always looking for signs. And a lot of those signs aren't really clear. But this one was like crazy clear. And I think if I didn't do it, I would have thought about it, the what if, like forever. And the what ifs always like burn me. They keep me up at night. So I'd rather make a mistake than do nothing and have to face that consequence.
Yeah. Did you, so obviously you were familiar with the show and you know, obviously the show, a lot of times you, especially in these one-on-one dates, people will talk about tragedy that they've endured.
Yeah.
Most people are fortunate enough not to have faced death
yeah.
that you had to face with Laura. Is that something, obviously you must have anticipated that coming up, and how prepared were you to talk about it? And did you anticipate going as deep as you did, which was, I mean, really inspiring, I think, to a lot of people and just kind of, your approach to it all. I think a lot of people watching it saw someone who brought a lot of perspective and calmness, especially in a world where we're so easily, we get riled up real quickly,
yeah.
real easily, sometimes for things that don't really matter or
Correct.
Often don't matter or yeah. a day later. Were you anticipating that? Was that a goal of yours to hopefully be a symbol of overcoming adversity and tragedy, or is it something that just kind of happened organically?
I would say it definitely happened organically. I mean, you never know how people are going to respond to one thing or the other. I mean, I know that there'd be a group of people that'd be rooting me on, you know, because of the loss, because, you know, I was in a relationship for, you know, basically 16 years. But then there's the other side of it where, you know, people criticize. How could you do this to your son? He's not ready to move on. You know, like, he never had like feelings or connections with Katie. It's like, you don't know what you're going to feel until you're actually in it and doing that work. And so I didn't have some sort of plan of, you know, being a symbol of like hope or inspiration or anything like that. I still don't even think I am. But, you know, I'm glad that people were able to hear about, you know, my journey, learn more about Laura, because, you know, I mean, you're always worried about how time works and how people forget. And, you know, one of the things that I always wanted to make sure was that people knew who she was too. So, you know, it was a nice way to talk about her. And I mean, quite frankly, if someone's asking me like who I am, how can I not go into depth about your past and your history? It's half of it at least.
Did you have any or a lot of conversations with Laura's family when going on the show?
We had a bunch of conversations and it was really difficult because they're amazing people. They actually just bought a condo in Akron. So yeah, they're from Detroit. And okay. So they live like 2 blocks away now. And I mean, Laura was an only kid. And so now James, my son, only grandchild. And, you know, I want to always make sure that they have like that connection, mm-hmm. Forever. So I'm super excited about that. They're great. But we did have a conversation about, you know, going on the show, and I knew it wasn't going to be easy to have to watch this. I mean, it's really strange. There's so many different layers to this. I mean, like people rooting for me, I mean, close friends and family rooting for me to, you know, find love, find a way to be functional, try to find a way to move on and move forward with everything that's happened. But at the same time, there's always that awkwardness of, for the first time, seeing me with somebody else, like even getting intimate with somebody mm-hmm. else. It's odd.
If anyone's out there who just needs to talk to someone, they're stressed out about life, anxiety, money problems, people problems, girlfriend problems, boyfriend problems, doesn't matter. Taking care of your mental health is super important, and we're huge advocates of it on the show. It's as important, if not more important, than your physical health, your diet, working out. If our minds aren't right, we can't really be right with any other part in our lives. And BetterHelp is helping us to making that easier. BetterHelp is committed to helping you get therapy that you need, with aligning you with mental health professionals. That's right. You can do it from the comfort of your home. It's never been easier to start doing therapy. I'm a huge advocate of it. Do it myself. And again, you can do it right from your phone, your tablet, your computer. You just go on there, do a quick assessment. They align you with a mental health care professional that fits your needs. And if you don't think it's a fit after maybe a one or two sessions, you can always switch. The point is getting your mental health right and taking the time to do it. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional online counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit BetterHelp.com/VialFiles. That's VialFiles. And that's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Again, if you've ever thought about getting therapy, you could be talking to your new therapist in less than 48 hours. That's right. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and VialFile listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/VialFiles. Shavings make a pile. That's right. Noom. Start meeting your wellness goals today with Noom. Just a few minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, can help make big changes in your life. Noom's cognitive behavioral approach focuses on the why instead of the what to help you change your relationship with food. Everybody's journey looks different. Noom customizes a program for you based on your personal goals. So whether that could be losing weight, could be gaining weight, maybe gaining muscle mass, you name it. Everyone's goals are different, and Noom is helping everyone get there. 80% of Noom users finish the program, and over 60% have stuck with their goals for at least a year. That's right. It's not a diet. No, it's a lifestyle. With Noom, taking care of your health is empowering instead of stress-reducing. No need to fear ruining the whole program with one day off. Noom will help you get back on track. All you need is 10 minutes a day. Noom fits into your life in your terms. No grueling early mornings or huge chunks out of your day. Noom, for me, just listen, as I get older, I just really want to maintain what I'm doing. You know, I just want to keep it going. And Noom is helping me do that because I love food. I have a sweet tooth. And, you know, the thing about Noom is it helps you not have to, like, eliminate any of that. It's just having things in moderation and keeps you track of the thing of your goals. And, can't say enough about it. That's right. Start building better habits for for healthier long-term results. Sign up for your trial at noom.com/VIALL. That's noom.com/VIALL.
You know, they did, you know, say, you know, we want you to be happy. If you think that this is going to lead to that, totally. And they appreciated me asking, but it's not without its pain. Like, without a doubt, it's just naturally ingrained in the decision.
Yeah. How much dating did you do between the time Laura passed and going on the show?
Yeah. So Laura passed in January 23rd, 2019. And I remember, like, sitting in my room kind of wondering, like, how am I even going to begin this? Well, one, and I think a lot of people who've lost somebody understand this, you develop these, like, odd habits. Like, for example, like, you share a bed with, you know, I share a bed with Laura forever, and you have her side and my side. And then after she passed, that side's just empty. and it's really strange. Mm. And so I didn't read this or anything, but I started laying across my bed. So it, like, my feet were on her side. I'm not sure why I gave her my feet, but I laid across the whole thing almost to like change habit or something. And I did that for, you know, like 8 months. It's super odd. But then I started thinking about, you know, what's it, what are these different phases going to be like? Cause I need to start moving and understanding what this like mountain ahead of me looks like for James and I. And I started going on some dates about, you know, three or 4 months after she passed, not with the intent of finding somebody. I went on about 10 dates.
Kind of getting the gears going almost.
Well, more or less, like, you know, you have all of these different like sensory experiences. You have the first time you're driving to go meet somebody. You feel like you're having an affair. Like the first time somebody, you know, they smell different or they touch you, like, and just nice friendly touch. Like, it's weird. It's not their touch. Like, inside jokes no longer land. Like, yeah. all of these different habits that you've become accustomed to over the years, they no longer apply. And so I was trying to gauge all of those different things. And I went on 10, one date only, different people. Like, and I was very upfront about, you know, my situation. I mean, back at home, you know, Laura's kind of inspirational journey, what she did, it was very public. So a lot of people knew about it even before I went on the date with them. So it wasn't like hiding intentions or anything like that.
You know, listening to you talk about that, it's interesting because, you know, with Laura passing, it's very obviously finite and it's definitive. And yet when you were telling that story, I wonder if a lot of people listening, even myself, you know, even when people deal with breakups, like let's say they're dating for 5 or 6 years and you break up and you know that person's still alive and well.
Yeah.
But just that, especially if you live together or you're had that routine and that thought, you know, of like that you break up and you go to bed and they're not there anymore.
Yeah.
And that kind of adjustment period and what that's like, or even like inside jokes or feeling like you try, even if you are the breaker up or were broken up with, there's a level of, especially if you have hope of getting back together. It's kind of fascinating dealing with loss or you know, just trying to move on from a time in your life where you were really comfortable or really enjoyed the, all the things that we invest in relationships and build in those, like you said, those inside jokes.
Yeah.
And it's what, you know, obviously if you deal with death, it's incredibly heartbreaking. And then, you know, if it's just heartbreak, there's a level of loss too.
Yeah. And there's even, you're so right on this. And there's even a level of like just tasks around the house, like, you know, whether it's grocery shopping or just things that were designated for one way or the other that are totally different. And, you know, even raising a single son, I have no idea why these things exist. I can't even comment on that. But Laura would typically know all the dates, like for school, like where you have to bring in, you know, Valentine's Day, like mailboxes, and there's birthday treats and, you know, certain things, like she always championed like those things. And, you know, it was a total learning experience where I had to completely shift and start adopting those because, you know, no one else is going to do it. And, you know, my kid can't be like, you know, the dirty, stinky kid in class. So it's like, I gotta man up here, guys.
Yeah.
Figure this stuff out on the fly.
Thinking about like the comparison between like a heartbreak or breakup and then obviously dealing with death, you know, when people break up, they go through those stages, right?
Yeah.
But there's, I got to move on. This person doesn't want to be with me, or I don't want to be with them, whatever, right? There's like, it's and you want to get to that place of indifference so that you're just like, hey, you know, like we're not together anymore.
Right.
You know? And then you make that, you know, people, you make the list of the things that you didn't like so you can focus on, but with Laura, your wife who you loved and would want to be married to if cancer didn't happen, how does someone in your position, you know, honor obviously the memory of your wife And it must make it so much harder to move on because you have to change some of those routines and let go of some of those things to a certain degree.
Yeah.
While simultaneously honoring her memory, making sure that your son, you know, still remembers his mom. Like,
yeah.
What was that thought process like? How do you go about doing it? Because just think about it out loud, it seems like an impossible task.
It didn't feel this way early on, but it's something I understand better now without being an expert on this whatsoever, just my own personal experience. Like, you have to be easy on yourself. It doesn't have to be perfect. You have to find a way to move forward. You don't move on and you don't like just turn the page as if it's didn't happen or if it's no longer there. Like, when you spend that amount of time with somebody, they're a part of you. I mean, they walk with you. And I remember feeling that pressure early on when Laura passed. Like, you know, what's 2 years look like? 5 years? 10 years? Like, how much distance is going to be created where, you know, we no longer remember her that, like, the way that she should be? And that was crazy scary for me because that's, like, a big important part in my life. And so I did create a nonprofit that honors her, puts her at the forefront, called the L4 Project. And that's kind of my hope, to do some good, kind of do this tragedy to triumph type thing. And hopefully it's something that, if it is successful, it's something that my son can actually, you know, champion one day and continue to keep that connection with his mom. Because you just never know how that whole thing works. Grief is really, really difficult. It's not linear. It has its peaks and valleys. The second you think you're past a certain phase, it bites you. And you're like, oh my God, I just went back like a year. You know, I'm back here again. And so it is. It's this constant balancing act that, you know, what I will say is it's never boring, but it's a challenge. And, you know, I'm lucky enough because I have a lot of family and friends that have been there since like day one supporting us. And without them, I mean, I wouldn't even be functional. So it's not at all me getting there. I mean, that's a piece of it, but it's also me being able to get there because I had an awesome community kind of taking care of me and watching my back.
Sometimes you just want cereal at 9:30 at night and you don't want to get off the couch because you are, well, you can't drive, if you totally candid with you. And that's where DoorDash comes in. That's right. So whether it's a late night cereal, your favorite restaurant down the street, pizza, Chinese food, sushi, you name it, DoorDash has so many great options available to you to get the food that you want and need. Cravings, that's right. It could be late night ice cream, whatever. With over 300,000 partners, you can support your neighborhood's go-to or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Popeyes, Chipotle, or the Cheesecake Factory. Also, it's a great way to keep people working. I know it's in pandemic. It's a great way to support your local restaurants. And they have contactless delivery, obviously, for make sure we're staying safe and not spreading, you know, anything, really. So, yeah, I mean, think of DoorDash next time you want some food and you feel like being lazy, which I do all the time. For our limited time, our listeners get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code VIALL. That's 25% off, up to $10 value, and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code VIALL. Don't forget, that's code VIALL for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply. All right, I want to pivot slightly and get into the show a little bit.
Let's do it.
It's a nice little transition, though, mm-hmm. leading up to this. And
you're a good interviewer, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I'm okay. Very insightful.
Thanks. Now you're making me nervous.
Yeah.
So we've just talked so much, obviously, about this process of overcoming or continuing to overcome, obviously, the loss of your wife.
Yeah.
And most people who go on the show are very fortunate to have to experience what you've had to experience. But going on the show, as you know, as well, is a whole nother kind of psychological process.
Yeah.
And then when you're in this bubble, and then when you leave, there's this kind of decompression of like what just happened. And like you said, there's these stages.
Yeah.
Right. It's different for everyone. How was it for you, and how much did you reflect back, you know, on all the things you went through with your wife to, you know, kind of overcome the challenges that are involved in kind of decompressing and getting back to normal?
Yeah.
From the show, which everyone who goes on it, especially if they're on it for a lengthy period of time. I mean, if you're on it for a couple of weeks, then it's
right.
Not quite the same, but you were in it for a long time. You were emotionally invested. You cared about Katie.
Yeah.
So for that, for people who experienced that, what was that like for you? And Ian, again, how much do you feel like that perspective you've had with the life that you've, you know, led and had to endure helped?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. And I think, I mean, anyone that has ever gone through this process or this show, I mean, it's really hard talking to other people about the show because they just don't understand. It's just this foreign thing, and that's what kind of makes it, you know, intriguing or unique. It's this crazy, like, you know, bonding, I don't know, trauma bonding, fraternity, sorority setup, maybe a little bit of both. But I kept reminding myself, even during the most difficult times, like where the show is really testing me, missing James is testing me, you know, balancing, you know, my past and my present on the show is playing mind games. I kept reminding myself that this is not the hardest thing I've done, like at all, And so kind of that's when experience kind of sets in, when life experience settles in. And, you know, if I would have been on this show, you know, when I was 25, I would not have been able to do it. Like not at all. You did?
No, I think about that too.
Yeah.
I didn't have to, again,
when were you on? Like, when
I was 33.
Okay.
Time.
Yeah.
So, and we, you know, Andy, she was as a bachelorette, she was 27, 28. So, I think the overall cast was in their late 20s or early 30s. But yeah, I, you know, since the show has evolved and like you've had, you know, like Peter, you know, you had a much younger cast of women and even some of the men on the seasons, I think to myself, like, how fortunate I feel like I was to have, like, you know, lived a life, but was in corporate America, you know, had a job, faced some real adversity, some heartbreak, and that all, yeah, I couldn't imagine. I mean, if I went on as like a 24, 25 year old.
Yeah, I would have bombed. Like, it just wouldn't have been the type of experience that it is for me today. Like, I was able to pull a lot of, like, meaning and a lot of things that, you know, 10 years down the road, I'll look back and be very thankful for, because I was taking those types of things in where if I was younger, they would have just gone over my head.
Yeah.
So I do think, you know, there's that part where having older people, you know, on the show, and I'm not even sure what defines older, but I was the old guy and I liked it.
Yeah. Did you find yourself counseling or being kind of the mentor in the house, or were you trying not to step on any toes, or did you find some of the guys were migrating towards you as they learned about you and what you've been through as someone who, you know, was kind of helping them get through certain difficult emotional times?
Yeah, I mean, what I'll say first is, like, sure, I'm older, had more life experience than these guys did, but this cast, like these guys, I mean, I'm not even kidding. They were very, like, emotionally aware, and they were deeper than I think most people recognize. I mean, everybody.
I think overall, it seemed like a solid group.
Solid cast.
And yeah, kind of just, you know, over, like, yeah, I think that generally came across to Bachelor Nation that we were dealing over, like, as a collective group, some quality men who were in touch with their feelings, weren't as, you know, other seasons are more bro-y, kind of
alpha
and, kind of, and I thought this group of men, you know, reflected
I mean, my roommate was Josh out of Miami, and he's 25.
Josh out of Miami.
He didn't get as much airtime as I wish he would have, because
Which one? What do you look like?
Incredible human being.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So he's 25. He was my roommate. And I remember thinking, like, when I was 25, I wasn't like half the man he is. And I was like, I can't wait for you to add another like 10 years. Because you're just, I mean, this guy has crazy depth, life experience, all of those things. And it's like when you're sharing a room with somebody, you're like, you know, God. And, you know, he's just a great human being. And so I guess to get back to your question, like, was I the mentor or things like that? I think what I did provide a lot of people was perspective when things felt like they were getting out of control or too intense or chaotic or something like that, to pull themselves away, kind of take a breather, understand like what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I remember in New Mexico at these COVID seasons, my God, you can't do anything. And so we're all just hanging out. And I mean, probably for like a 2 or 3 week span, I was just like manning the grill, like totally leaning into like this old
dude. That's what I would have totally done.
Yeah. It's a Midwestern thing, you know? And I was making, you know, all of the producers and all the handlers food, you know, everybody on the show, like, and I'd make them their
very,
you know,
therapeutic.
Dinner.
I would have loved, yeah.
Yeah. I love that I could do it because I love to cook. And I would be like, all right, have fun on your date with Katie. You know, be back before midnight. Yeah. You know?
I'll have some hot dogs ready for
it. Like, how was tonight? Anything you want to talk about? Yeah. Is everything okay?
So you ended up sending yourself home. Did you anticipate that might be a possibility going into the show, given obviously with your son and the challenges that you were going to face? You got to FaceTime your son on a regular basis.
Yeah, not as often as I wish I would have not as often as I wanted to, I should say, because, you know, we were like 3 hours behind, and the opening to actually FaceTime him, you know, it changes. It's not like 1 o'clock every day, be there. So, and then you had a producer kind of over your shoulder, which, you know, really makes for a real intimate conversation with your son.
So it's a challenge.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a challenge. We were able to like connect, but I didn't have any expectations going on to the show. I didn't know how far I'd make it. I didn't know if I would actually develop feelings for Katie. And I told Katie, I mean, probably more than she probably ever wanted to hear it, was like, if I'm not feeling this, like, I'm totally leaving. But then, you know, like our one-on-one date happened. And that was when everything changed for me, where I actually got to know her as a person. And it's not always what people say, but you can see it in their eyes too, you know? Like, you can hear it in their tone. They're not rehearsing lines that they think look good on camera or going to be great sound bits. Like, you can feel it. And I remember being like, oh, like, there it is. Like, that's the reason I was here. And actually, I didn't have a group date or anything for like the first like 10 days. I just went straight to one-on-one right after like 12 days of COVID, quarantine.
Quarantine, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, not having COVID.
Yeah. Just want to make that clear.
Yes.
So after you left, in the time, you know, the internet was abuzz by some of the comments you left on Katie's Instagram, what do you regret more, not having a beard while filming the show or flirting with Katie on Instagram, now knowing that she was engaged?
Correct. Yeah, it's a bad look. not the beard. The beard's a great look. Yeah, total, you know, looking back.
It's totally fine. We're messing with you.
No. I want to clear the air here, because it's important to know, one, what I did. I'm not like looking back, if I could have never done that, please, never would have done it. The other side of it was, I really didn't know if she was engaged. And quite frankly, a lot of her like social media activity
suggested maybe she wasn't.
100%.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm not sure if that's typical of leads to be that active on social or whatever. But I mean, as someone that's just kind of waiting around and remembering what it felt like when I left and like that connection, I couldn't help but think that it was still carrying over. But then you watch the season and you realize, she's developing amazing relationships with other people outside of me. You know, you're like, oh my God, Leah, like, how stupid was I? And I do think that her and Blake are like an awesome match. And I wasn't able to see that when I was on the show. That's and pretty, so, yeah. You know, after I did my creepy old man like comment, I, and
what did you even say?
I said, can't say what I want to. And it was a picture, but that even makes it worse. Because it's a little too vague.
If it was very open-ended.
Yeah.
And it was like a thirst trap photo of Katie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she was looking beautiful, and I said that, and like people are like, oh my God, does this guy know how to use the internet? And
I really don't think it was that bad.
I mean,
in your defense, like you said, like you did it. Like it's a common story, right? And a common story that's the idea of the show. That especially the five or six guys who really are forming connections with the lead truly feel like their connection is the strongest,
absolutely.
Right? Because in a normal world, how could you imagine having strong feelings for someone and them have the ability to act and do with other people that they're doing with you? It's it's fucked up, right? And it's human nature for you to think that.
Yes, and I did contact like Blake. And totally apologized after I saw that they were together. I was like, dude, I'm so sorry. And Blake's awesome.
And he seems like a chill guy.
He's awesome. Yeah, yeah. I mean, just he's secure.
Yeah.
Like he knows, he's like, dude, no problem.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, cool. But I just want to let you know, like, I wasn't trying to step on toes, like, you know, weird time.
Sure.
Chalk it up to a weird time.
And like you said, I mean, Katie's social media activity, whether she was trying to get people guessing or was it deliberate?
Red herrings everywhere.
Hanging out with other guys from the franchise he's sent home. You're just like, maybe she's just like, this is a free agent we're looking at here.
And you can't talk to them. Like that was always the frustrating part too. Like being on the show, you're like, I got a question and I got to like wait multiple days to even be able to possibly have the opportunity. And then the show ends and you're like, wait, I still have questions. But you know, you just have to wait and watch everything unfold.
A lot happened on the show after you left. Most notably, the breakup with Greg.
Yeah.
And that was very triggering for Bachelor Nation. It was allegedly triggering for Katie, as we found out in After the Final Rose.
Yeah.
Well, what are your thoughts on Greg? What were your thoughts on the fight? And let's just start with what we saw as far as a breakup. What was your perspective knowing Katie and knowing Greg?
Greg probably he got off to such a fast start. I mean, first impression rose, then, you know, first one-on-one. And actually, you know, he got a second one-on-one. I mean, he got the most time. I mean, throughout the whole entire thing, you know, he really didn't have to question where he stood. He was kind of the front runner in the house. That also comes with a lot of weight to start that early and then have to see all of these guys, you know, start to develop real connections. I would say watching that fight that breakup unfold, one, emotionally charged. I mean, anybody that questions the authenticity of the show, I mean, sure, there's editing stuff that they just have to do to make it, but that's what real breakups sometimes like look like. They're messy, they're dirty. And I couldn't help when I was watching it, like, you ever see Full Metal Jacket?
I have, yeah.
When he's like, what we have here is a failure to communicate.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what was going on. And some of that is based on the structure of the show and what you can and cannot do and just those limitations. But also, I think when they first got together, I mean, that was coming off me leaving too. So I do think Katie was in a very difficult place. And, you know, people are human. Like, they deserve some grace. Like, we make mistakes. I mean, across the board. I mean, I know I have. I think Greg's an amazing person. I think it was this crazy intersection where he finally opened up. And finally, like, spilled everything to Katie. And when it wasn't reciprocated for one reason or the other, you know, that really hurt him. And, you know, when you get hurt, they always say hurt people, you know, hurt people. And
we had Greg on, and he acknowledged that he was guilty of whether it was like a conscious thought in the moment, but reflecting back that he probably wanted her to feel the pain he was feeling.
Yeah. I mean, however the subconscious works, I'm not even sure. I think, I guess that's the whole point of the subconscious. It felt very real. You know, it felt like something like that could easily happen, you know, in the real world off a set.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know that, you know, Katie is certainly somebody that, you know, is charged. You know, she's somebody that's like emotional. That's also one of the biggest pros of her.
Katie accused Greg of acting. Do you think Greg was acting?
If you look at me on the show, I have no idea what's going on, like the whole time. I mean, zero. So I wasn't even thinking about that. Watching it and knowing Greg, I would say I don't believe he was acting. I mean, I think if he was, he could have had, I don't know, a better departure. Like, why would, if you are actually skilled at this, why would you choose this route?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's better alternatives to how it ended. I mean, I know that some of the backlash that he got was, I mean, very, very severe. And if he had this master plan, I don't think he would have chosen that route whatsoever. I don't know who would.
What did you think of how Katie approached AFR with Greg?
Yeah. Again, like, for people that are questioning, like, are these emotions really running high? They are. And I was not surprised she came out there and you know, handed it to him. I think she was waiting for that interaction for a long time, and she was stewing. And while you're offset, you know, you're reading all these things on, you know, on the web and whatever. And so, you know, personally for me, I wish she would have, you know, focused more in on how happy she is, because I do think her and Blake have something like special. And I think, looking back on it, whether or not she's right or wrong, but I do think it may have taken something away from the moment that they could have shared for, you know, after the final rose kind of deal. So, I mean, I haven't spoken to her about, you know, how she's feeling about it. But, you know, everything will be all right.
Yeah. Katie wanted an apology from Greg with how he handled his anger towards her.
Did he give it to her? I don't even remember.
At AFR, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It didn't come naturally, you know, and obviously it sounded like she was triggered by his, you know, he was prompted with the question, do you regret anything? And he was like, no, you know, it's probably, you know, like I said, I saw it as, you know, it was a bad look for sure.
Yeah.
He explained it, and I understand his point of view, where he's just like, yeah, everything happens for a reason. I'm not with Katie. Blake is. I'm
right.
Happy for them. Obviously, given how things played out, you can see how that's not great. And then, you know, they're out there. You know, Greg offered his apology.
Quick question. Do you think things actually happen for a reason?
No.
I don't either.
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
That's a totally stupid thing for people to say.
I'm not, like, I don't believe
especially
that.
Especially someone from your position. What the fuck does that mean? Like, Laura's supposed to have, like, passed away?
You know, I mean, things happen for a reason. Like, people are always like, yeah, if this didn't happen, then this wouldn't have happened. It's like, no, that's just an event happening and you making a decision.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, we don't have to get all existential and free will and we deal with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't believe it's just this random walk.
Do you think Katie should apologize to Greg for how she
approached it? Are you kidding me? You're
going to
ask me that? Yeah. that's up
to
them.
Do you think that
would
be the nicest thing to do?
That's up to them. I'm not touching that. Not touching it. No, I'm not touching it. It's not yes. It's not no. It's nothing.
Okay.
You get nothing from me on that one.
And you like Blake. You like Blake and Katie. You rooting for him? I mean, so
yeah.
We're all rooting for him. How do you think it's going to play out?
I think they actually have something crazy special. I mean, no joke. And it was actually nice seeing it too. Because, I mean, you know, from being the lead, it's exhausting. I mean, you're supposed to be everything to everybody. I mean, I think you didn't give a shit a lot of times, which was good when you were doing it. Like, you knew who you were, whether or not that's age or everything else, which I think helped you during your journey. But it's not without, you know, your bumps and your bruises. And at the end of this, you just want to be happy. And it's emotionally draining and everything. So when I'm watching them interact, it's like, oh yeah, like I can see it. And I'm really kind of irritated with people saying that like Blake and Katie got together because of default. I think that's insanely wrong. And like, as much as I wish, you know, things would have possibly been different, I mean, everything happens for a reason, right? Like, I'm really excited for them. And he was by no means default. And I think people need to just scrub that from the conversation.
I agree. I mean, like we talked about it. I think Katie was always going to pick Blake.
So do I.
Yeah.
Like, looking back on it now, I mean, it didn't feel that way going through it. But yeah, I mean, they, in hindsight, looking at it from, you know, 10,000 feet, it totally makes sense.
Speaking of The Bachelor, a lot of people, I think everyone in this room, were hoping you would be our next Bachelor.
Thank you.
Are you the next Bachelor? Ooh, yeah, let's start there.
So I get this question a lot, believe it or not, and I typically have to give the same answer, which is they approached me. There have been discussions, and no decisions have been made.
What are reservations you would have of being the next Bachelor?
So I had reservations, like I said before, being a contestant. Those are even heightened when you're the lead. Obviously, there's you know, a lot of like shiny things that come with the lead, but sometimes like not everything that shimmers is gold here. And I have to think about, just because of my life and the things I actually care about, my son, you know, my like lifestyle, like what do I want after this? Am I ready to introduce my son to random people that he doesn't know? Maybe. I don't know. But those are all just complicated things.
If the show, I mean, we know the show approached you, but let's say it was a serious, something you were on the verge of considering, it would have to be a different type of season.
100%.
Right? They would have to accommodate your specific needs. Personally, I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
We're talking about some large organizations who run this franchise. What would be those, how would that have to look for you to be the next Bachelor?
Yeah, I mean, obviously being away from James, as you saw, it's too difficult for me to bear, and I wouldn't want to like replicate the past. And, you know, one thing I'll say real quick, and I've got so many opinions on this. One thing I'll give Katie crazy props on is, no matter when anybody got home, how many roses they had, how far they made it, consensus as a whole is that Katie made everybody feel like they were the only person in the room. That is a crazy skill, especially when like your heart or your mind is with somebody else. I mean, you're human, you mm-hmm. have preference. And so I remember thinking, would I be able to like do that if James wasn't there, or if like, you know, I'm thinking of something else? And, you know, if I was the Bachelor, 100% James would be there. And I don't believe that, I mean, they've made accommodations to people in the past mm-hmm. with that, you know, Jason Mesnick and Maynard.
Emily.
Yeah. But also, yeah, I mean, I'm 37, dude.
So?
Not looking to like date around and do all that, like casting is totally different, you know, and, you know, location is different. And how to, not only just finding the person that you want to be with because you feel that like connection, but how do your lives intersect? You know, what does it look like after the show? You know, do you have a career? Do you want to be somewhere else? Like, I'm in Ohio and I love it. And so there's all of these different things. Like, if I was the Bachelor, are you pulling heavy from the Midwest? You know, like how is this whole thing happening? It's just a different level of collaborative effort across like all the disciplines in the show that would have to be working together to, you know, make sure that, you know, they're giving me somebody or a group of people that actually want this. Which I think is totally possible, but it's just a shift, as you know.
It's possible, but the show would have to shift that. I don't know. Yeah. if the show is casting for TV first and love second.
Yeah.
And then truthfully, they don't need you to be compatible with 30 people.
Right.
They want you to be compatible with 4.
Yeah.
And then you
like
decide.
on your season, did you feel like you knew your 4 early?
Yeah, Raven, I didn't really notice Raven until like week 3.
Yeah.
But once I had a one-on-one with her, I was like, she, you know, top 4.
Yeah.
I had a top 3, and that was kind of different than everyone else.
Yeah.
And I knew, you know, Rachel for sure.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, she got my first impression rose, and then Vanessa was always my front runner.
Right.
And that's usually how it goes. And then, and someone might have a top 4 or top 5 or top 6, but it's usually not much more than that.
Yeah.
In terms of like people that are, you know, they meet night 1 and you're thinking, oh, this could be, you know, it. So to your point, the show could cast like of the 30 people, 15 people from the Midwest, but the 3 of your favorites are from like Hawaii
right.
and Montreal.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But people, me and Vanessa moved to LA.
Yeah.
What I'm saying, Michael, is if you have reservations on being the Bachelor, what questions do you have for me so that I can maybe convince you to consider it? Because I think the franchise needs someone like you to be their next Bachelor, who I think is a little older, who's experienced some real life experiences, not necessarily the tragedy you faced with Laura. But we've gotten younger Bachelors the past couple seasons. People, you know, Peter, nice guy, lives at home, and we saw a guy who couldn't decide. Matt James had never really been in love. He kind of struggled with, you know, his choices.
And I feel like Matt's situation was difficult too, because he wasn't even on the show before.
Matt's was difficult on so many levels.
I mean, every level.
Yeah. But I'm just talking about just the fact of like life experiences. And the show historically has, like I was an outlier, right?
Yeah.
And I think the way the show is being viewed now, there's a heightened expectation of men in general in society. And we want, like, I want the show to cast a guy like yourself who has higher expectations of himself, because I'm sure you've made your dating mistakes. I mean, obviously you were with Laura the whole time, but like you said, you weren't the same man you are now.
Correct.
You probably had been toxic at times in relationships. Even I'm sure you and Laura, you could probably look back.
Yeah,
and think
nothing's
of,
perfect
and stuff like that. So me, I'd like to see a season where you bring all these life experiences into these dating conversations that, quite frankly, are just going to be different with you.
Yeah.
Than they're going to be, let's say, with someone like Greg.
Yeah.
So what do you need? Like, what's the one thing holding you back more than anything?
You know, I think for me, I'm always battling this thing where it's like, what's best for me? And then also, or what do I want as an individual versus what is best for my family? Like, you would think a lot of times they totally align, but they don't always. And, you know, there's a part of me that I'm thinking, you know, is this like unorthodox route what I want James to like look at and be like, oh, that's how you find a wife. You go on ABC. Mm. It's all unorthodox. And, you know, love is love too. Like I've done the full circle there. You know, I think putting life on hold is difficult. I'm working on some like crazy awesome projects. I mean, outside of the nonprofit that would totally be put on hold for this. And I know that it's worth it when you're looking at the investment and long term for yourself. But you know, would I be able to do kind of what Katie did and emotionally make myself available to that amount of people and give them the attention that they need?
You might not have to, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you could debate, you know, for example, I think that's a great skill. Ben Higgins had that skill too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Ben's awesome.
I don't know if I was good at that. I broke up with like a lot of women on dates, but for me, it was just more, I didn't want to, I was a two-time runner up who felt led on often.
That's what gets you on Rushmore, buddy.
Yeah. But so for me, at the risk of not making everyone feel like I was, you know, that the every morning rose with them and right, set with them, I was okay with some women knowing that, and it was never going to happen.
Right. Which I think is fair too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what so, you want anyways.
I think that's a great skill honestly, that Katie yeah, had, and definitely in the moment makes everyone feel, and then honestly, it makes for great TV.
Yeah. Because
right? Everyone is more like more chances of people being like, oh, I think I'm the one.
Yeah. Right.
But I don't know if that's necessarily required for you to be the bachelor or even be a good bachelor.
Yeah. I think you're probably right on that. And I mean, I often overthink things and you know, sometimes the simplicity of it is your answer. And I gotta tell you this. So, you know, when the conversations with producers about being the Bachelor like started, you know, I had so many questions about whether or not to do it. I mean, and all of that. And then I actually like spoke with James. I was getting a call at like 7 o'clock, and I was like, James, Daddy's got to jump on a call at 7. And he's like, what's it about? I was like, well, you know, that show Daddy was on, they, you know, they're considering me to be on it again. And he's like, well, you know, what's that show about? And I was like, well, it's about finding Daddy a girlfriend. And I remember talking to him and he said, you know, would I be able to come with you this time? And I was like, oh, of course. Like, you know, if they wanted me back, that I'd never like leave you. You would totally come with me, do the whole thing. And then, you know, he's like, "What's wrong, Daddy?" And I remember I told him, I was like, "You know, well, Daddy's having a hard time. You know, like, you know, still misses like your mom a bunch, like all of those things." James comes back and says, "Well, if you found a girlfriend, would she live with us?" And I was like, "Well, she would if you wanted her to, bud." And I was like, would I be able to help choose that girlfriend? And I'm like, yeah, you would totally be able to choose that girlfriend. And I was like, James, what are you looking for in a girl? And he gave like the most like misogynistic answer. He's like, well, she's got to clean and cook. And I'm like, oh God, James, come on. Like, he's like, I mean, I did agree with one of them, which was, you know, she has to be able to read. Okay, so I was sure. Like, that's like, you know,
a core competency we want in our partners. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Color within the lines is big for him. And then, you know, I was just like, I just don't know like what to do. You know, I'm struggling with, you know, a lot of these things. And he just basically said, you know, don't worry, Dad, like everybody needs somebody. And this was like 5 minutes before my call. And I was just like, oh my God, like here I am trying to project everything onto my son, you know, everything that I'm feeling. And he put it just so beautifully as a 5-year-old, like how simple it actually is. All, I mean, almost everything in life is actually a lot simpler than people make it out to be. And here I am, you know, giving that advice while still simultaneously not being able to take it. But wow. I understand the irony there. But it was a really deep conversation for, you know, a 5-year-old to have. And, you know, I think he wants to get back to normal. You know, he sees his friends have like, you know, a mother and a father, and he knows that it's different. We talk about grief all the time. We talk about who his, you know, mom, you know, was and continues to be. And all of those things. I wrote a little children's book for him that's just one copy that we read. But yeah, I mean, it's complicated and it's not, you know?
If it's not going to be you, other names that have been thrown around, Greg.
Yeah.
Andrew, a little bit. I know there were speculation that Greg was the choice or whatever, and that seems to have died down a little bit. Truth, you know. Do you think, if it's not you, do you think Greg would be a good bachelor? What would his strengths be? What would his weaknesses be?
I mean, the internet thinks Greg is hot as shit. So aesthetically, he's obviously killing that.
He seems like an attractive person through Zoom.
Yeah, right. I know. Oh, that's funny. I think Greg, he's very kind of in touch, you know, with, you know, his emotions. I think he's somebody that, you know, based on his family life, and, you know, he's somebody that's been through obstacles. And I think that's vital. I mean, like, I could never be with anybody that doesn't have scars, like, at all.
I love that. I always say we're damaged, not broken.
I love it. I mean, if you're talking to somebody and they're like, you know, life is all just rainbows, that's not being optimistic. If you don't have that, you know, real testing moment where things aren't rainbows,
Sure. Like,
that's just being naive. And then it's when you actually have difficulties and you still feel optimistic, still feel hopeful, like that's been tested. I think Greg does have an element of that. I think Andrew definitely does. I mean, the guys on our show, they all came with, you know, some deep stories where they were all tested. And I mean, I know this, I'm long answers for your quick questions.
It's a podcast, man.
Yeah.
That's why we're here.
I know.
I've never been given a short answer in my life.
I know. I'm long-winded here. You can't get those sound bites from me. But I think both of them would be good and they'd offer different things. Andrew's funny as hell. So his would be very like entertaining and like lively, high energy, I think. I think Greg's would be, you know, I mean, we saw how he did it with Kate, I mean, prior to the fight, but, you know, like intimate, like all of that.
Greg mentioned that he... or acknowledged he has some work to do on himself, that he maybe realized some kind of healing he hasn't fully completed.
Yeah.
Do you think he would be capable of being the Bachelor of finding love while simultaneously following through with what he says he needs to work on?
Well, I mean, I'd be hypocritical to say no for that because I was doing the same thing on the show. I mean, I was healing from grief and... I mean, who the hell goes on this show for mental health? I mean, it's like, why? But there is a mental health element. Like when you are forced into interviews, like discussing your past, running through things where normally it's very therapeutic. You're like, can we just do some interviews real quick? Because my mind's a mess. And I do think you can find some answers by going on the show and taking a break from life. So I wouldn't draw a hard line there and say no or yes. It really would depend on how he utilized that time and that opportunity if he were to do it.
If it's not you, do you have a preference on who you think it should be between Greg and Andrew?
Not really. I mean, I'm close with both those guys. You know, I talked to, you know, I think Greg like last week was texting with Andrew in Chicago, you know, yesterday. And I don't know. I think the good part here is that, like, there are a lot of eligible people. They're not, whoever they choose, they're going to be good people that offer something different. It just really depends on what type of season producers feel like they want to have.
One final question about the show, and I'm just dying to get your perspective on before we get into a little bit more about you. Thomas has been a point of discussion, especially now in Paradise. And it's something that I've personally like been fascinated by because I didn't get to meet you when I hosted that day, but Thomas was one of the guys on the date. And
I heard all about it.
Immediately, I was just like, this guy's just full of shit.
You know?
And yet, the narrative and everything that happened with Thomas after I met him seems to be so outrageous. What is your take on Thomas? Like, it seems clearly he's a bit of a bullshitter and a little corny. He's tall. He's incredibly good looking. Is he the narcissistic trash bag human being that Aaron, Trey, and James and some of the other guys say, or is he just another young man who might be a giant but has some work to do on himself? Like, what is your read on this guy?
Yeah, Thomas was a difficult one to read. You know, like when you walk in there night one, you're like eyeing people up. You're like, you know, the guy in the cat suit, he's going to be cool. you know, Thomas, like, he could be a problem.
Sure.
I actually thought Christian was going to be a dick, and he became one of the coolest dudes on the show.
Boston guy.
Boston guy. Like, I was like, he was wearing like a green velvet suit, and I'm like, oh my God, like, you're in trouble here with me. But with like Thomas, and everyone was wearing capris, by the way. Like, who is
apparently, young men now feel like, I love a slim skinny jean, but pantsuits have turned into capris.
I remember thinking, and you know, and we're roughly the same age here, like, we would have gotten our ass kicked for something like that back in the day, you know, like, not
a
chance. What
are you doing, bro?
Yeah, I know. You're wearing socks. Yuck. To get back to Thomas, I think with him, I think he has a tendency to fall into like corporate speak.
Yeah.
You know, when you're on like those teleconferences and you don't know what the hell people are saying, but it sounds good because they're using like the jargon. I think he believes some of the things that he says and thinks that they're insightful. But I mean, I think watching it back, there's a handful of times it's like, what are you talking about?
He's clearly disingenuous to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean, could just simply mean someone who's not confident in himself. Sometimes I think we have a hard time looking, you know, like you look at someone like Thomas and you think, this guy could do literally whatever he wants. He's
one of the biggest human beings I've ever been around.
And yet anyone can have insecurities. To me, so you know, being disingenuous could mean incredibly insecure.
Could be.
And he could easily just be incredibly insecure. I mean, I don't know. It's been fascinating because, like, I picked up on the same thing you picked up when I first saw him, but I'm not at the same time willing to label someone and diagnose them and define them as when I don't know Thomas.
Yeah.
I met him for like 20 minutes.
You know, I would say this because there was a couple times where Thomas, you know, he was like ostracized from the whole house and I'm just like the old guy at the bar or the grill, just like, what's going on, guys?
Yeah.
And Thomas came up to me and he's like, what do you think's going on? Like, this is happening. But I was like, you really just need to quit teaching people shit. Like, stop like trying to mansplain everything to everybody and just listen to people, like get to know them. He was always trying to create like a solution. And post show, he actually reminded me that I said that to him, and I've gotten to know him post show. And he's a great dude. Like, I mean, he's a really nice guy. He's got his things he's got to work on. Just like, I mean, shit, I do too. But it's just, that's the interesting part is who you are on the show and who you are off the show, because it does mess with you.
Yeah. And it can be a catalyst for change if you want it to be.
Yes.
Right. Unfortunately, I think it can hurt more people than it helps, but that really comes down to the individual.
Absolutely.
On what do they want to make of this experience and what are their priorities? Is it to reflect and see what you can work on, or is it to get everyone to like you?
Yes.
And it's usually one of the, if it's the former, you have a shot. If it's the latter, you're in trouble.
Yeah. And I remember talking to Thomas too about this. I was like, you know, if you're going to bulldoze people, bulldoze them. If you're going to be everyone's friend, be everyone's friend. You cannot do both simultaneously. And that's where he's getting like hung up. Like, he had his one route and method of how he wanted to pursue Katie. But then after that was done, he had this whole other buddy-buddy route. And it was like, that's one of the benefits of being on the show too. You're being filmed 24/7. You're mic'd up 24/7. You can't hide. Like, your true character comes out. And in so many ways, that's actually very helpful for finding your person too, because people can hide more in real world offset than they could onset.
What's something you've learned about yourself recently, whether it's through the show or after the show, or maybe it has nothing to do with the show, but is there anything about yourself that you've had I didn't really realize about this?
I would say not a big fan of social media, you know, like really don't like doing that as much as, you know, sometimes we have to. I am happy that we got, like, you know, in my inbox, there's tons of amazing stories of people, grievers, you know, caregivers, stuff like that, single parents. That does feel like a full-time job. Something I learned about myself is that, you know, I think it's capable to actually build a future here. I mean, I'm not joking. There's like, people always see the end result and they don't see the minute by minute, like day struggle. And there was a long time there where, you know, I've just felt numb and I felt like it was going to be literally impossible to find somebody to raise James with. And I'll take this to my grave. I felt that hope when I was on the show. And that made me, that surprised me too. I didn't know I was capable of even like being able to open myself up to the prospects of it. But I mean, that's a good surprise.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I thankfully did not have to deal with tragedy like you had to, but as someone who was dating older in my life,
yeah,
we talk a lot about this a lot, but you know, it's a fine line between kind of an innocence,
yeah,
and naiveness, which can be really great, and having perspective, which can also be great, but it brings in cynicism.
Yeah.
And the show for me was a catalyst for feeling like a kid again. And falling in love, and because outside the show, I'm too pragmatic for my own good sometimes.
Yeah. Getting your own way a little bit. Yeah.
So I totally get what you're saying. What's something that in relationships, and I don't mean necessarily just romantic, you know, friendships, because you know you were with Laura obviously for a big chunk of your adult life. But what's something that in relationships you put up with in the past with how people communicated to you or treated towards you that you now realize is more of a non-negotiable that you are in tune with that you think is important for you to prioritize avoiding in relationships going forward?
So that's a great question. One, I don't think if somebody has to know who they are. I mean, that's like baseline. That doesn't get you any more points, but that, like, for me, that's when, I mean, that's just par for the course. Like, if you are coming in and you don't know your foundation, you don't have to have like the self-enlightenment type of scenario, but you have to know who you are. And then there is the responsibility of both partners in a relationship that have to constantly feed and fill that confidence so that people, it's a safe place for people to be able to be themselves and not have to become something or do something where, you know, I think this will make him happy. I think this will make her want me more. And then everyone's keeping score. Like that idea is, I think, is very present in a lot of relationships and also incredibly toxic. So, you know, that loyalty element, passion is huge. Purpose is huge for me. Like, don't talk about materials and people. Like, talk about ideas, talk about concepts, talk about things that are like lasting and larger than, you know, just this or that. And, you know, I don't like the materialistic like things. I mean, those things go away. You know, it's like, what's the everlasting stuff, the bigger piece? You know, some people haven't spent the time exploring that or going through that investigation to figure out, you know, what it is that really connects them to, you know, their partner and the world around them.
You might have already answered it with that last question, but what's advice you would give 21-year-old Michael when it came to, well, maybe anything, but specifically love?
Man. I think I drank too much that year. I'm trying to remember who the hell I was. Yeah. You're gonna have to go to like 30. I would say you find really the intimacy and the meaning through the struggle. Don't avoid the struggle. That's actually like the greatest opportunity for connection to happen is during those times. And I mean, over Laura's and my 16-year relationship, littered with tons of struggles. I mean, as it would. That's how life works. But then the cancer diagnosis, I mean, that's a massive obstacle. And I found we grew closer in a way that I never thought possible during the most difficult times. And some of that is clarity. Some of that is like, nothing else matters but this, that simplification, you know. And don't run away from like the obstacles, embrace them and look at them as opportunities to grow with someone that you care about.
Do you worry at all whenever you find love, whether you're the bachelor or not? You know, one thing I saw on the internet, or yeah, I think you and Katie talked about it, was living up to the memory of your wife.
Right.
Is that even something that you worry about, or you feel like your next great love is going to have to worry about? What's that like?
I mean, it's a great question. It's my responsibility to make sure that they feel that like the love and the relationship is entirely unique. Mm-hmm. That falls on me, but also that goes back to that person being confident in who they are. Like understanding that this is something that comes as a package with me. Like it's all a part of it. And I honestly don't see myself comparing. And it goes back to kind of what you're saying too about like being back on the playground type of deal, like finding a spark again, like having something brand new. Like that's like great. And there's tons of things that, you know, like Laura didn't like the same music I liked, you know, like she liked like oldies and Motown. And, you know, there was never something we bonded over. Like,
what music do you like? Who doesn't like oldies and
Motown? Well, I like it, but it's not like on loop.
You're like, oh, this was fun, but man. Like,
yeah, right. You're right. Let's get the party going.
She's like, it's Flashback Friday.
Let's get out Four Tops again. Thanks, hon. But like, that's a cool, you know, thing that I'll be able to bond with somebody about that's totally unique. I don't see myself comparing like at all, but I know that fear is real. And I know that weight is going to be carried by whoever decides to jump into this circus.
What's the worst date you've ever been on?
So this was probably like three. So let's see. Remember I told you about like the 10 dates?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I think maybe like the fourth one. Found this girl on like Hinge or something. And, you know, she from every angles, you know, she looked like she had her stuff together, you know, worked at hospital, like very smart, you know, all of that. I end up going to this date and I'm not going to talk about her name, but the name that she had and who she introduced her as, like I saw like her hospital ID and it was a totally different name. And so first I'm like, okay, like, I'm like, what's that? Like, why is it? And she's like, oh, yeah, that's my name, you know, my mom gave me, but I, you know, I hate it and I don't want to do that anymore. Then she starts to tell me.
Which is like, okay, I'll buy that.
Fine. Yeah. Fine.
You're like, okay.
But then, like, she spends like the next like 2 hours, and I'm being like really nice, talking about like how her. It's kind of sad too, but I don't know if it's real because she didn't even tell me her name. Was that like how like her mom used to have, they used to have like Munchausen syndrome. You know, when like you keep your kids sick.
Yeah.
Like she was telling me this whole story about that. And here I am in my head thinking like I just lost my wife. Like I'm totally grieving. This story is like, one, I don't know if it's true. Two, if it is, it's so sad. And like, I was just trying, I got a babysitter for James. I was just trying to have a night out, like, you know, get some appetizers, you know, like just hang out. And then became this whole like therapy session. And
it was like a cry for help.
It was frightening. It was frightening. And I was like, okay, like, Chuck, please. She's like, will I ever see you again? I'm like, you know, everything happens for a reason.
Sure does. You've been great. Before we let you go, we like to play a fun game with our guests.
Yeah.
It's called Do You Know Me?
Okay.
You down to play?
Down to play.
Real simple. I'm going to ask you some questions. Does Michael does this? Have Michael ever done that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no questions are fine.
Sure.
Anecdotal stories are welcomed, but not expected.
Thank you.
Do you know me with Michael Alio?
Perfect.
Is Michael a morning person?
I'm a night person.
That makes so much sense because he's a dad.
That's like, right. Mornings are
stuff during the day.
Straight
once
struggle.
The kids go to bed, that's when you have a life.
You know, like I stay up late.
Really?
Like I stay up till maybe 2:30 in the morning every night. And it's literally like once I get my son down, I'm like crawling. I'm so tired. And then he gets down and I'm like, I've got so much time for myself. I can do whatever I want.
Is that something you've like as a dad you've done, or were you always like a night person?
I was always a night person, but like the idea of just this like freedom that happens every night where you can just do what you want to do. Like, and you know, usually it's not like I'm like doing this amazing stuff.
Turn off the kid TV.
Yeah. I'm like binge watching Netflix and like eating way too late, but yeah, night person.
Does Michael have their read receipts turned on in their messages? But you're a Samsung guy.
Uh-huh. Which I do want to talk about real quick.
Yeah, because I text
people
you.
People hate me for this. And
it's so, yeah. No, it's.
The green bubbles.
It was just like.
Yes.
Ruin group chats, Michael.
I was like coming into this interview with so much high expectations. And I was just like, ew.
You have to understand how much I hate group chats. And that's one of the reasons why I don't get included on them.
I do hate group chats, and that is that I would switch to Samsung just to be off of group chats.
People will like text if I need to be on something, they'll text me individually about it, and I love that like filtering element like by itself that I'm not just going to be thrown on here, and then people who aren't doing anything during their day when I'm running around are just having these side conversations. So, yeah, big ups to Samsung and Android. Holler at your boy.
Has Michael ever popped someone else's pimple? Are you a pimple popper?
I mean,
it's
not
it's
like
usually one of the two.
Not full time, but yeah.
Not full time.
Yeah. It's not on my resume, but yeah. I mean, every gross thing you could imagine, you know, it's kind of come my way.
Can Michael name three Britney Spears songs?
Toxic. Is that the Slave for you?
I'm a slave for you.
Yeah. And One More Time. Hit me, baby. One more time.
Is it One More Time? Is it called One More Time? Hit me, baby.
It's called Hit Me One More Time.
Hit me, yes.
Can you name three Taylor Swift songs?
No.
You're not even try?
No.
Come now, Michael.
I'm not joking.
Give us a, throw an effort.
I would totally, like, I
There's
really.
There's not one. Can you name one?
I really don't listen to her at all.
But it's just like on the radio.
But I don't listen to the radio.
Oh, no.
He knows Britney, which I applaud.
Yeah. I mean, come on now.
Amazing.
You know, I mean, this is going to get some serious blowback, worse than the Katy Africa thing.
Can you name four countries in Africa?
Zimbabwe.
Amanda picked that out. I just want to.
Zimbabwe.
Which
Mozambique.
Is totally fine. Yeah. But like, you know.
To be fair, I thought she was going to do it. I wasn't trying to make it like a gotcha thing. I thought she was going to be able to do it.
It's not our bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want me to do this?
Yeah, please.
Zimbabwe, Mozambique, South Africa, Congo, Ivory Coast, Namibia. Let's see.
You're going for like the non-basic ones.
Yeah. Sudan.
Do you really wanted to upstage your ex-girlfriend, didn't you?
And he missed like he did. Like
maybe
a
little.
He missed the easy ones like Kenya, Ethiopia.
Yeah. Right.
Like,
right.
Like everyone knows.
Yeah. I can't believe that ever became a thing.
But this Taylor Swift thing's about to be a thing.
It's imagine Michael gets canceled because he can't.
Oh my God, the outrage. I'm sorry. I mean, for anybody that's going to throw shade on this, which I already imagine will happen.
Just say Shake It Up.
Oh, yeah. Shake It Up is also my favorite.
Welcome to New York.
Yeah. They actually just told me that over my headphones.
Shake It Off.
Yeah, way to go, Chrissy.
Oh, shit.
There you go.
Good luck booking
Thanks
Taylor.
Thanks a lot. This is an ambush.
I have my own time.
Has Michael ever bought something off eBay?
Oh, yeah. I bought my golf clubs off eBay.
Have you ever gotten scammed?
I don't know if they're authentic golf clubs, but... You know, they sold them to me at a good price. Usually what I do when I'm like finding new clubs, I'll go to like a, you know, Golf Galaxy or something, try one, and then wait a year, then go on eBay and just get like 1 year use, and it's like a third of the price. So
would Michael ever pose nude for a magazine?
No. I don't think the world wants to see that. I mean, you guys saw me in that, like,
have you ever sent a nude?
That sling, you know. What?
Have you ever sent a nude?
No.
Ever?
Nope. Have you?
Yeah, people I've dated.
Oh. They ever surface?
They're my faces in it. Oh. It's not something I made a habit.
Watermark your nudes.
Okay, that's good to know. These are all new things I gotta figure out.
We,
you know,
we got you.
Okay, yeah. Good. I know who to come to.
Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Yeah, it's probably Big Papa. Notorious B.I.G. Yeah, yeah. I can kind of I can rattle that one off. No.
Okay. So great.
God. Has Michael ever faked an orgasm?
I mean, typically we don't have to, but sometimes when you drink too much, you know, I think it's more or less like, you know, it's more like compassionate or sympathy for the whole when you're like, this just has to end. Like, she's not having fun.
Maybe
like,
a more appropriate question would be, have you ever thought and or called out a partner for potentially faking an orgasm with you?
100%. You can totally tell.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's pretty obvious. You guys aren't the best actresses. I mean, let me tell you. Not fooling anybody. But sometimes
the one for me was as soon as we started having sex, immediately was like, I'm coming. And I'm like, no, you're what?
Impossible.
It's not
impossible.
There's like barely any foreplay
on the stove, and it immediately starts whistling. And you're like, hold on a second.
Right, something's out of whack in the universe here. Like, what TV show is on in 2 minutes that you need to get back to?
Give me a chance to try, you know? Like,
and she's like, The Bachelor's on.
Yeah, right. That's right.
I was like, you watch too much porn.
Yeah, right. Desensitized.
Have you ever fainted?
Yeah. Like a concert venue. Overheated. You know, I think it was like a Lollapalooza in Chicago or something. It's always like the hottest day. And yeah.
Have you ever been suspended or fired?
Never been fired. I've been suspended from school.
You have?
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I mean, drinking. Like, this is high school.
I drank a lot in high school, huh?
Yeah, I got off to a fast start. And now, like, by the time I got to college, I'm like, I'm kind of tired. But yeah, got suspended there. Got suspended for one time at college for getting in a fight.
In a fight?
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been in a lot of fights?
No.
Did you win?
What was it about?
So I was actually dating this girl, and she was from Chicago, and we were leaving like the bar together. And there were three guys that kind of came up to us, and one of the guys, you know, he went to high school with her in Chicago. So he knew her, and he didn't like the idea that she's dating me or something. And then there were like these two other guys that didn't even go to the school. So I end up dropping her off at like her dorm, and I was in another dorm. I go back, and like three of them are like waiting for me. Like, it was just kind of like that fight or flight moment. This is like on camera, like right in like the Commons area.
Yeah.
And I just didn't even think about it. So yeah, I got a good couple on the first one, and the other guys just kind of jetted. Thank God, because if they would have stood their ground, I would have gotten stomped. And then that guy actually, he transferred to Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Huh. Yeah. Did you get that on tape? Because
I'm sure the security videos have
God,
it.
God, I would have wanted that moment.
Roll the clip, please.
Yeah.
Watch that back. But this is where Daddy like took down three dudes.
No, I'm definitely not a fighter. But I mean, there's some times where it's like, you know, you can't be. You tried everything, and you know, it just has to happen sometimes.
Do you like it that many women in Bachelor Nation are referring to you as Daddy?
It's a little bit odd. It's strange. Zaddy is something that gets thrown around. Yeah. You don't know what Zaddy is? No. I just learned this too. I think it doesn't even have to be, I mean, we'll ask the younger girls here, because I think it's do you guys know what that is?
No. The younger girls, what are you trying to say?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a newer term that wasn't in our lexicon.
Yeah, it went from like damn daddy to like zam zaddy. And I can't exactly explain why, but it's just a vibe thing.
Yeah, I think I don't even think you have to be like have a child
No.
Either.
It's, certainly not.
No, yeah. No, yeah. It's, I think it's because at first I thought.
Are
I was
you
like,
into that?
Having a child?
No.
It says the definition.
Being called daddy or zaddy by someone you're dating.
No. But with the right person, maybe. Like I'm leaving the door open here.
What?
The definition of zaddy is great. Sexually attractive man, especially an older one who is fashionable or charismatic.
Yeah.
Well, how about that?
Do you find yourself to be a sexual
person?
Michael?
Yeah, I totally am. I mean, how can you not be?
A lot of people aren't sexual.
Yeah. No, I'm totally affectionate. Totally, like, I mean, it's essential to have a good relationship. Like, you got to be out there. I don't think I'm fashionable, though. Like, I will say that.
Like,
nice. No, thanks.
Like, Riley, have you been watching Paradise?
I haven't been catching up on it as much as I should. How's it going?
It's wildly entertaining.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been rooting for some of my guys.
Riley, there's a gentleman.
I know Riley. Yeah.
His move was he's a chin grabber, as he explained. And I'm not, but it works for him. Do you have a go-to makeup move, like on a first date or a kiss or... how do you sweep the ladies off their feet? Like, if you were going to be the bachelor, what could we expect to see a lot of when it comes to Michael's embrace?
Yeah, I don't know. What would be my move? I don't know. I'd have to get like a survey monkey out there and try to collect some hard
Just
data.
Just go up to them and be like, I'm a zaddy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'd probably say sometimes I'll bite a lip.
Okay.
That's a good move.
A nice, easy one, gentle one, not like hold on to it and stretch it out like a fruit roll up or something. Like, you got to let go, buddy. Let the fish off the hook.
Final question before I let you go. What would be one thing is a misconception about you or people find surprising once they really get to know you? Like, if for the people you let in
on the show or just like in real life?
In life.
I mean, I think in real life, people aren't necessarily people don't have a like preconceived notion of who you are until you meet them on the show. You know, if you looked at like the whole season, you know, I look like this okie dokie like neighbor next door, and that's mainly because most of all the conversations I'm having with Katie, like, they don't require humor. Like, they're actually deep, serious conversations.
It's not a comedy.
Right. No, we are not doing a comedy here. And so those are all like very real moments. But, you know, I find the humor in everything. I've got a really dark sense of humor. I think people are like, you know, he's, you know, boring or too tight or one thing or that. And that's completely opposite.
So you're not Mr. Rogers.
I'm not Mr. Rogers. No.
I mean, you do have some sort of band.
Yeah.
Mr. Rogers wouldn't have that.
People had...
Where's that from?
I get a lot of questions about like the tattoo. It's my only one, actually. And this is like a universal sign of like grief and loss.
Huh.
So if you ever see people that do have bands, like typically on the upper part of their forearm, it is that they've lost somebody significant.
You got that after you lost Laura?
Here's the thing. I got this in December of 2018. I'm driving from Akron to Delray Beach because we were getting some investigational treatment down there. And prior to doing that, Laura and I had a conversation about getting a tattoo. And forever, Laura's like, and I actually like tattoos a lot, but you know, you have to pick the right one. It has to mean something. You don't just get it. And she was like, you know, tattoos are for white trash. And I'm like, relax. Like, they're great. And so towards the end, she was actually wanting to get one. And so we were actually going to get one together. And so when I was driving down to Akron, I stopped in like West Palm and actually got this done. And I knew I was going to do that. She was going to get like three strands of rope that were like tied in a knot, something like that. And unfortunately, she wasn't able to get that. But I'm so happy that I did this because it means so much. And it facilitates a conversation that often continues to bring her up.
That's great.
Yeah. How about yours?
They're all members of my family, except for a few other ones that have other personal significance.
Yeah, I like
and
it.
This is my dog.
I like the black ink. Like, I would never do color ink, I don't think.
Yeah, I can't say that I'll never do it, but I don't see I like the black.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There's part of me that's thinking now that I have this that I'd probably concentrate everything on one arm because I do love it. And, you know, this is like the beginning of a chapter and then everything else is like built upward.
Yeah. We could get Michael tatted up.
And yeah. A little teardrop.
Zaddy.
Get daddy a teardrop.
Now, when you start referring to yourself as daddy,
yeah,
I don't know.
That's a problem.
I mean, I'm not. Who are we? It's not for us to decide.
No, let's just throw it out in the world,
Michael,
and let them eat it.
Michael, it's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, my man.
I'm sure we could talk a lot more, but for the sake of time, we're going to let you go. Thanks again.
This has been a blast.
I hope whatever you decide to do with your life, I hope it's a great success, and I think it will be. And if we don't have the pleasure of seeing you again on our TV, on behalf of Bachelor Nation, thank you for being such a nice change of pace and offering some nice perspective. And thank you for the happy and sad tears.
Yeah.
They were quite nice. And maybe it won't be the last time. Give it some more thought if it's still an option. And, you know, it's interesting because hearing you talk about being the Bachelor, everyone goes on to be on TV, and I have no problem with that. And, you know, for different reasons, you obviously are taking an incredibly pragmatic approach, and it seems like the TV element, well, I'm sure would be exciting for you as well, would be not as a big of priority, and which would be a real fun thing to watch.
Yeah.
Someone who even more reluctantly than most people
catch all of its awkward glory
would be the Bachelor. But whatever you decide for yourself,
thanks,
it will be for the right reasons.
That's right.
You know, it'll have, you know, but whatever. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, guys, for listening. Sure. Don't forget to send in your questions at asknick@castme.com, cast with a K, for Ask Nick episodes. And if nothing else, we will see you back on Monday.